Chapter 9. How to Ditch Vegetable Oils for Good. In this chapter, you will learn how to distinguish good fats from bad fats, how to identify two other categories of problematic ultra-processed food ingredients, protein powders and refined carbohydrates, how to spot the hateful eight before you buy, and how much is too much, how to avoid vegetable oils while dining out. By now, you may have already rounded up all the vegetable oils in your kitchen and tossed them. Good riddance. In this chapter, we're going to cover everything you need to clear the oils out of your house, because they may be hiding where you least suspect. We'll also see that when we're avoiding vegetable oils, we're automatically cutting down on two other important categories of ultra-processed ingredients that also harm our health. Then we'll cover the essentials for avoiding these oils everywhere else, with essential tips for dining out in a variety of venues. The following chapters in this part of the book will walk you through a better way of eating to support your body in healing, along with a 2-week challenge to get you started. Before we jump in, a note. I know that getting rid of a bunch of food can be an emotional and expensive endeavor. You may wish to take smaller steps. Instead of throwing away a lot of food from your cupboard and fridge in one fell swoop, you might commit to not buying anymore and replacing any vegetable oils and vegetable oil-containing foods with healthier options as you finish them. If you'd like to do the challenge in this audiobook, you won't have to buy a lot. It's up to you, whatever feels right for your budget, your comfort with risk, and your family's health. While, as I mentioned in Chapter 3, it might take years for PUFA to fully clear from your body, the good news is that usually people feel better within a couple of weeks of cutting out vegetable oils. Are you ready to take these next exciting steps for your health? Let's begin. The Delightful Dozen Cooking Fats. Happily, avoiding seed oils opens you up to a variety of healthier and tastier options. Consider the Delightful Dozen your antidote to the hateful eight. Except as noted, all the fats in the Delightful Dozen can be used for cooking. Unlike vegetable oils, which are almost tasteless, you do need to choose the oil that matches the cuisine, and I've made some notes on that. For that slight extra thought process, you'll be rewarded with a much tastier dish. Some people worry about smoke point. I discuss this in depth later in this chapter, since their high smoke point is a tactic used to sell vegetable oils. All of these options may seem overwhelming, but you don't need all of them. To get through your 2-week challenge, you'll probably only need 3 or 4. In the United States, most people use butter, olive oil, and peanut oil most of the time, as these are readily available and relatively inexpensive. They are also amazingly versatile and tend to go with a variety of cuisines. If you like to make East Asian-style dishes, you might want to add coconut oil and/or toasted sesame. As your repertoire expands, you'll probably want to have more than just 3 on hand. Butter. Butter is hands down my favorite cooking fat. I use it with simply flavored foods such as eggs, steak together with olive oil, and chicken livers. When it browns slightly, it creates a delicious, nutty, slightly butterscotchy taste. Butter burns easily, so if you want a nice brown sear on your meats and veggies, you will need to lower the temperature if you see the butter starting to smoke before the food has had a chance to cook. Real butter has only one ingredient, cream, unless it's salted, in which case it has 2. Grass-fed butter is best, as it contains more omega-3 fatty acid, vitamin A, and in the spring and early summer, vitamin K2. It also has a more complex and, I think, better flavor than regular butter from grain-fed cows. Extra virgin olive oil or unfiltered, unrefined olive oil. I use olive oil for robust flavored dishes, including homemade pasta sauces and anything Italian, Mediterranean, or Mexican. I also use this versatile oil for roasting vegetables and making dressings, marinades, and mayonnaise. You can get unrefined olive oil, also known as extra virgin olive oil, or EVOO, or even better, look for unfiltered unrefined olive oil, which is higher quality than ordinary extra virgin. These types of oils are cold-pressed to remove the oil, and there is no additional refining that would reduce their nutritional value. Unrefined peanut oil. I use peanut oil instead of olive oil when I'm cooking with soy sauce or miso. Unrefined peanut oil is best. It should be very flavorful. Some people recommend against using peanut oil because it does have a higher PUFA content than most others on this list, but I keep it on the list because peanuts have been bred for thousands of years to be high in oil, which makes the final product more nutritious. If you or someone in your family has a peanut allergy, allergists will tell you that refined peanut oil is actually safe because all traces of protein are removed. Unrefined oil is not safe for those with allergies. Unrefined coconut oil. Boldly flavored coconut oil goes amazingly well with East Asian and Indian flavor profiles. Coconut is extremely heat stable, and a little goes a long way. It's also great for your skin. You can use it like moisturizer, and a little goes a long way here too. Unrefined avocado oil. Avocado oil is a new kid on the block. It's not a traditional culinary oil. However, its fatty acid profile makes it good for culinary uses. Unrefined avocado oil is expensive and will have a strong flavor. Avoid the private label companies, for example, the store brands, as there is currently no regulation in this facet of the industry, and about 70% of these are adulterated or oxidized. Examples of good quality? Non-private labels would be Chosen Foods and La Tourangelle. Ghee. Ghee is simply butter that has been clarified, a process that involves heating the butter to coagulate the milk solids and then skimming them off. This is a traditional practice throughout India. It helps to preserve the butter in the hot climate. It is actually less healthy than regular butter because the additional heating destroys some of the more fragile nutrients, particularly omega-3 fatty acids. But it's still a healthy and flavorful culinary ingredient, and it's gaining in popularity across the world. Sesame oil. This is a high PUFA oil. What is it doing here? Similar to peanut oil, it's a traditional oil that has been cultivated for thousands of years. This has imparted special properties that make it more suitable for use as a culinary oil. And sesame is now an essential component of many cuisines. If your dish calls for more than 5 or 10 minutes of cooking, it's best to combine sesame oil with more stable oils, like coconut or peanut. Because it's high in PUFA, it's not a good oil to cook with day in and day out, even if it is better than other vegetable oils. Tip: try an Asian oil medley made by combining sesame with peanut and or coconut oil in roughly equal parts. Unrefined palm oil. This is a traditional low PUFA oil, but it's not often used in many areas of the world, perhaps because of its flavor, which is sometimes described as earthy and carrot-like. It's a great choice for making soups and sauces and sautéing, especially if you like the spices and flavor profiles of the African continent. Red palm oil has a much stronger, more bitter taste than other types, so make sure you know which one you're getting. Most palm oil in processed foods is refined and falls into the third okay but not great category discussed next. Bacon fat. Use bacon fat to cook eggs, steak, burgers, and anything else you want to give a bacon flavor. I like to warm it up, drizzle it over spinach, and add a splash of apple cider vinegar or lemon for a quick salad dressing. Unlike other recommendations on this list, bacon fat isn't something you need to buy at the grocery store. After frying bacon, pour off the fat into a clean heat-proof jar or grease can, cool it, and store it in the fridge. It should be used just once, so if you have any bacon fat left over in the pan after cooking with it, discard it. Tallow. Tallow is simply beef fat. It's extremely heat-stable and has a high smoke point, making it the best cooking fat for extensive high-heat frying, particularly shallow pan or deep frying. Even so, after two or three uses in a deep fryer, it should be discarded. Lard. Lard is pig fat that's been rendered by a process similar to making ghee that helps to preserve it. It has a high smoke point, but is less heat-stable than tallow, coconut oil, and butter. It's great for baking and making pie crusts. Chicken fat. Rendered chicken fat is a huge part of Jewish cuisine, where it's called schmaltz. If it's made from the fat of pasture-raised chickens, it will have a better omega-3 to omega-6 balance than when it's from confinement animals. Unrefined tree nut oils. Any nut can yield oil, but the most popular tree nut oils are almond, hazelnut, and pecan. Do not use walnut oil for cooking, as it is too high in easily oxidized omega-3. I've experimented with these oils for pan-frying fish, poultry, and other meats, and it seems like they taste good with just about anything. Unrefined nut oils are generally very expensive specialty items, so I don't include them in the delightful dozen. Although they are probably not going to become your go-to cooking fats, they are a fine and nutritious choice. That said, if you or someone in your family has a tree nut allergy, you should skip these. Okay, but not great, refined fats and oils. This category includes oils that are chemically more stable than the Hateful Eight, but that have been subjected to extensive refining. Refined oils are far cheaper than unrefined because the raw materials can be significantly lower in quality, since the refining will strip out unwanted components. They're also less flavorful, less nutritious, and more prone to oxidizing, because many vitamins and antioxidants are also stripped out. They do typically have higher smoke points as a result, although this is not a nutritional benefit, as discussed later. Refined and hydrogenated oils are the empty calories of the fat world. These oils are not nourishing, but they're not as bad as the Hateful Eight, so they fall into a middle category, okay, but not great. You don't need to avoid them, but if you can, find an alternative that would be more nutritious. Refined avocado oil. This product can be useful for making mayonnaise, since it lacks the strong flavor of olive and unrefined avocado oil that some mayonnaise aficionados object to. Private label brands are often adulterated. Refined peanut oil. Refined peanut oil has a more neutral flavor than unrefined, making it more suitable for making mayonnaise if olive and avocado are too strong for your tastes. Some restaurants have started using refined peanut oil as their cooking fat, which is much better than a Hateful Eight oil, but still not ideal. Refined peanut oil is generally devoid of peanut allergens, but this is one of the least healthy of the oils in this okay but not great category. Refined olive oil. Refined olive oil contains more PUFA and fewer vitamins and minerals than EVOO and unrefined oil. This, too, is on the unhealthy end of the okay but not great collection of oils. Refined coconut oil. Coconut oil that has been refined is often slightly coconut-flavored, but less so than unrefined coconut oil. It is also less beneficial, although it is very heat-stable and oxidation-proof. Like unrefined coconut oil, it works well as a skin cream. Refined palm oil. This type of palm oil is used in many baked goods and nut butters. The refining process now used reduced the formation of carcinogenic byproducts that were a problem until around 2015. If you see an item in your cabinet that contains non-hydrogenated palm oil, it probably falls into this category. It is likely refined palm oil, and thus okay but not great to include in your diet. Hydrogenated fats and oils. You may see hydrogenated coconut oil, palm oil, or lard listed as ingredients, especially in peanut butter and baked goods such as pastries, cookies, cakes, and donuts. The two most commonly used hydrogenated fats are palm oil and lard. Hydrogenated fats and oils contain mostly saturated fat and are therefore safer than the partially hydrogenated fats and oils, which contain mostly trans fat. Hydrogenation takes away the double bonds, turning unsaturated fat into saturated fat. Partial hydrogenation takes away some double bonds, and those it leaves behind have been distorted into an unnatural configuration that chemists call trans fats. Both processes improve the fat's resistance to oxidation, thus lengthening shelf life, which makes foods that are made with them cheaper. If the label says hydrogenated, that means it's fully hydrogenated. Bad fats and oils. Ditch products with the following bad fats whenever possible, unless the amount is minimal. If a product does not list any of the fats and oils on this list, it's free of toxic seed oils. However, it's not entirely free of oxidized, toxic PUFAs. Let me explain. In addition to the Hateful Eight, there are now many different products made from seed oils that you'll see on labels, including lecithin and enteroesterified products, which I'll discuss later. Unlike the oils listed as bad fats themselves, the seed oil derivatives are not absolute deal breakers, as they are generally present in smaller amounts. The Hateful Eight. I've discussed these at length in Chapter 1. So that you can easily spot these on ingredient labels, look for any of the following. 1. Corn oil. 2. Canola oil. 3. Cottonseed oil. 4. Soy oil. 5. Sunflower oil. 6. Safflower oil. 7. Grapeseed oil. 8. Rice bran oil. Also avoid vegetable oil, a general term for any of the Hateful Eight. Partially hydrogenated oils. Partially hydrogenated fats are rarely used since the trans fat ban. Only the Hateful Eight will be partially hydrogenated. Believe it or not, partially hydrogenated oils are actually worse than fully hydrogenated ones. These are less oxidation-prone than PUFA, but trans fats have a kind of double bond that nature rarely makes, and eating a lot of trans fats can have toxic effects. Vegetable lecithin. Lecithin is an emulsifier that helps blend fats and water together. It's getting harder, but not impossible, to find chocolate made without soy, sunflower, or other vegetable oil lecithin. Vegetable lecithins are not at all healthy. However, if there's no alternative product, it's still okay to buy it, because for the most part, only very small amounts are used. Mayonnaise and salad dressings are notable exceptions. It's better to get mayonnaise made the old-fashioned way, with egg yolk, or make it on your own at home with an oil you like. Other artificial fats. A growing collection of engineered vegetable fats are being used in our foods. These go by a variety of names that you might read about in health-oriented publications, including structured lipids, tailor-made fats, designer lipids, modified fats, restructured fats, and novel triacylglycerols, or TAGs. More seem to be popping up every few years. Unfortunately, right now, we can't usually tell when they're in our foods. The only ones currently listed on labels are the interesterified fats, made by rearranging the ester bonds of the fat molecules. All are best avoided because they are essentially experimental chemicals that food manufacturers have invented to comply with various government recommendations about avoiding cholesterol, saturated fats, and more recently, trans fats. You can thank the American Heart Association for these experimental foods. The good news is that they're expensive, and so they're not yet being added in particularly large amounts. Understanding smoke point. If you've heard the term smoke point, you should know it's a marketing angle for the oil industry. It doesn't tell us anything our own common sense wouldn't tell us. The term smoke point refers to the temperature at which a fat starts to smoke. At the smoke point, you might see a thin wisp of light blue smoke, and heating the fat past that point will fill the air with bitter smoke and ruin the food. Smoke point says nothing about the chemical stability of the fatty acids to oxidation. While cooking with a high smoke point oil allows for higher heat and makes things go faster in a busy restaurant kitchen, using high heat makes foods cooked in these oils potentially more toxic than they would be otherwise. To understand why this is so, it helps to understand where the smoke comes from. The smoke is coming from the combustion of proteins and free fatty acids. The Hateful Eight oils have zero protein and very few free fatty acids compared to unrefined oils, and so they tend to have higher smoke points for that reason. But their higher smoke points allow them to be heated to the point they oxidize and become more toxic. The lower smoke point of healthy fats and oils will prevent you from eating them after they've been oxidized, so you aren't eating toxic food. Most foods shouldn't be cooked at super high temperatures anyway, because heat also destroys the nutrition in the food. The higher you heat something, the less nutritious it becomes. A low smoke point also helps make food taste better. If you want a nice browning on your steak or your scallops, for instance, you'll get that faster using butter. Part of honoring the ingredient is learning how to cook it just right, and that applies to the fat you're using as well. Contrary to popular belief, you can actually deep fry in oils with a low smoke point right at home in a deep cooking pan because it doesn't take extreme heat to crisp batter and cook the interior. Italian chefs often deep fry eggplant, for example, in a suitably deep pan filled halfway with olive oil or peanut oil. However, you do have to watch much more closely, since if it does start to smoke, the hot oil can boil over the pot and make a dangerous mess. Vegetable oil's little siblings. Vegetable oils are the worst ingredients in our food supply, but they're not the only ingredients worth avoiding. Two other components of processed food also make it very unhealthy: protein powders and refined flours and sugars. I group these last two together because they are chemically nearly identical, being composed of sugar molecules. Together with vegetable oils, these three ingredients represent more than three-quarters of the average American's diet. There's a lot of talk about what constitutes processed food that makes the issue much more complex than this, but this is really the crux of the problem. Having been convinced that cholesterol, saturated fat, and salt are harmful, we're now living on three industrial products. Enough is enough. It's time to identify them clearly and learn a little bit about what they are doing to us. Refined carbs, empty calories that age our tissues. Carb is short for carbohydrate. Carbohydrates include fiber, starches, and sugars. Many foods are naturally high in carbs, particularly potatoes, rice, and fruits. But those are not what I'm talking about here. Here, I'm talking about the factory-refined sugars and flours. Unlike vegetable oils, these ingredients have their uses, so we don't need to categorically avoid them. It comes down to the dose. These kinds of carbs are empty calories, meaning they're devoid of nutrition. They lack other complex nutrients that take a while for our digestive systems to process, so they can get absorbed very quickly. When we eat foods made mostly from refined carbs, they spike our blood sugar and our insulin. High blood sugar isn't good for our tissues and can accelerate a process called glycation. Glycation accelerates the aging process in many tissues, especially our joints and skin. Foods made with sugars and refined carbs are also problematic for the simple reason that they are also easy to overeat. Remember that sweet foods and foods full of starchy carbs can be addicting, so it's very easy for our plans to eat just a little bit to turn into regrets that we ate too much. Still, even these bad carbs are not as bad as vegetable oil. If you don't have diabetes or pre-diabetes, enjoying them in small quantities from time to time is not especially harmful. The key is to feel you're in control. A lot of people think of sugary foods and beverages as a source of instant energy, but it's a very short-lived energy burst. Blood sugar spikes cause insulin spikes, which help us clear that extra sticky sugar out of the bloodstream. Since insulin works quickly to get the extra sugar into your fat cells, rather than thinking of sugar as instant energy, it's more accurate to think of sugar as instant body fat. After a blood sugar spike, the big spike of insulin often pushes the blood sugar back down a little too far, making us hungry or tired. If you get hungry or tired a few hours after eating something full of carbs, think of that as the feeling of your fat cells filling up with more fat. Spotting refined flours. The most ubiquitous refined flour is wheat flour. You will see this on the label as wheat flour, whole wheat flour, or simply flour. Both wheat flour and flour are actually just white flour, and the vitamins listed on the nutrition label are artificially added, not naturally present. You might expect whole wheat flour to be better, but the reality is that flour labeled whole wheat has actually been extensively milled and processed. Let me explain what I mean so you can understand why the kinds of breads I recommend provide significantly superior nutrition. Most flour in the United States is processed into three parts: the endosperm, starchy and nutritionally bereft, and the germ and bran, both nutritious. This is done for supply chain reasons, since most products are made with white flour, and millers usually need to sell the germ and bran separately. In the minority of foods that also contain the two nutritious components, manufacturers will simply recombine the three back together, and the reconstituted product label can say whole wheat flour. The problem with processing wheat like this comes down to oxidation. As long as the seed remains intact, the vitamins and fats are protected from oxygen. Disassembling and reassembling the wheat kernels exposes them to oxygen. After just a few weeks or months, depending on storage conditions, most of the nutrients are oxidized. As we've seen, oxidation both reduces nutritional value and creates toxins. The oxidized compounds impart a bitter flavor that is often assumed to be an indication that bread is healthy. For whole wheat flour to be truly healthy, it needs to be eaten shortly after being milled, and this can only be guaranteed by bakeries that do their own milling on site. I recommend choosing either bread sold right where the flour is milled, or bread made with intact grains that have never been processed or oxidized, called sprouted grain breads. More on this in the next chapter. Due to the fact that whole wheat flour is oxidized and white flour has very little nutrition, I recommend limiting foods made with mostly flour, such as baked goods and pastas. I personally avoid them because I don't have space in my calorie budget for the empty calories. White flour is fine if it's a minor ingredient, but I do avoid most pasta, cookies, cakes, crackers, pretzels, chips, muffins, cereals, pie crust, donuts, and pastries, as well as breads in general. See Chapter 10 for recommended breads. The vast majority of these foods also contain the Hateful Eight vegetable oils. However, if you are looking for an occasional treat, see the supplementary PDF, which includes a link to my shopping list, where you can find better brands that at least are not made with vegetable oil. Using flours at home. I want to point out that even white flours have their uses. For example, if they are super healthy foods that you do not normally like, a recipe using a little flour might turn them into a favorite. A couple tablespoons of flour can make a roux for thickening bone broth into gravy. Coating chicken livers in a bit of flour before frying them up in butter gives them a delicious nutty flavor. Of course, making your own sourdough bread is another great use of flour, and here, freshly milled whole wheat is a better choice. Ancient grains such as barley, spelt, and teff are even better. Spotting sugars. Cane sugar, beet sugar, honey, maple syrup, and fruit juices are all examples of ingredients that are essentially pure sugar. There are dozens of other names for sugar that you'll find on labels, and I don't expect anyone to memorize them all. The most important terms to look for, besides plain sugar, syrup, or juice, is anything with those words in them, such as date sugar, barley malt syrup, or cane juice. Another trick to finding secret sugar is to look for words ending with the suffix OSE, as in sucrose, fructose, xylose, or dextrose. Protein powders, the protein equivalent of sugar. Modern food processing practices extract protein from its original source and concentrate it into a powder. This reduces the nutritional value of the protein. All processed proteins are best avoided for several reasons. First, they have been separated from the whole food. In addition to being stripped of fats and carbohydrates, many of them have been stripped of the vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients that were present in the original food. Thus, they are relatively empty calorie proteins. Second, extracting the protein from the whole food often destroys and distorts a portion of the amino acids, which is very similar in concept to how vegetable oil extraction and refining distorts PUFAs. Third, when added to foods, they react with other components in ways that are more likely to generate oxidative stress-inducing toxins. This is an especially serious problem for babies. Protein powders have been shown to damage intestinal cells, but they are nevertheless ubiquitous in infant formulas. Shame on the American Academy of Pediatricians for accepting money from formula companies, failing to inform parents of the problematic ingredients they contain, and failing to develop an alternative for the millions of women who are unable or choose not to breastfeed. Fourth, they can be adulterated and contaminated, and consumers have no way to know. Fifth, the protein content can be overstated. Currently, manufacturers are not required to assess or disclose the degree of amino acid destruction or toxin formation that occurs during the production of processed proteins. Finally, these processed proteins tend to get absorbed into our bloodstreams very quickly, spiking the amino acid content of our blood in ways that our biology is unprepared for. Just as sugar spikes can glycate and age our tissues, amino acid spikes can too. Given their chemical properties, I worry they may damage our kidneys if we eat very much, and may contribute to declining kidney function, high blood pressure, kidney stones, or gout. Spotting protein powders. The most obvious sources of protein powders are literally called protein powders. These include the athletic supplements sold under the guise of muscle building, diet drinks sold as protein shakes, products sold as protein smoothies, and nutrition boosters for the elderly, toddlers, and people on the go. Even though it's a small portion of our average calorie intake, protein shakes and supplements were worth about $7 billion in total revenues in 2022, reflecting an extraordinarily high profit margin. Compare this to the $13 billion in revenues for the 26 billion pounds of soy oil produced in the United States the same year. Protein powders are essential to the protein bar industry, including vegan, low-carb, and keto products. Vegan meats are particularly likely to contain a form of processed soy protein called textured vegetable protein. Frozen food manufacturers often save money on ingredients by filling their products with processed proteins that cost far less than actual meats. And lately, manufacturers catering to protein-seeking and low-carb consumers will use protein powders in their pastas, breads, wraps, and other baked goods. All of these protein powder-containing foods overstate their nutritional value for the reasons described earlier. Worse, they're likely to contain compounds with at least mild toxicity to our gut flora. Due to these low-level toxins, I worry that regular consumption of highly processed proteins may cause later development of food allergies and autoimmune diseases. Fortunately, they are easy to spot because they are listed on the label with the term protein. The exception is casein, a kind of milk protein, which will be listed simply as casein. Common processed proteins listed on labels include milk protein, whey protein, soy protein, egg white protein, pea protein, brown rice protein, and textured vegetable protein. The least processed form of processed proteins is called protein concentrates, as in milk protein concentrate or soy protein concentrate. The most processed form is called protein isolate, as in whey protein isolate and soy protein isolate. Even if you don't try to reduce your intake of refined carbs or protein powders and only focus on avoiding vegetable oils, you will be eating less processed food. And so, you will be cutting back on these other two ingredients almost automatically. Now that you know about the two other bad players in our food supply that you'll largely be avoiding as a byproduct of cutting out seed oils, you're ready to learn how to expunge these oils from your life completely. How to spot the hateful eight. When you're shopping, or if you're undertaking a kitchen detox and weeding out the seed oils in your pantry, fridge, and freezer, look at the ingredients list of every product that has a nutrition label. Every single one. In fact, if you want a suggestion for a first easy step to getting healthy, I would like to recommend that you make a habit of turning around every package and reading the label every time you go shopping. Reading labels is necessary because you simply can't predict what will have vegetable oil. You might think that dried fruits, for example, wouldn't have vegetable oil, but they do. Or peanut butter, or the butter on your microwave popcorn, or nuts, rotisserie chicken, mayonnaise, and dressings that say made with olive oil, granola, even healthy high-protein brands, canned tuna, olives, sun-dried tomatoes, and other vegetable preserves, even random things like vitamins and spice blends. The only exceptions are things like bottled water and beverages such as juice, soda, and tea. Although these may contain unhealthy amounts of sugar, so I'm not recommending you drink them. The ingredients list is not in the box labeled Nutrition Facts, and it's generally not going to be located on the front of the package. To find the ingredients list, you need to look under the black and white Nutrition Facts. Some awkwardly shaped packages will place them next to this label or on the side. The writing is tiny, unfortunately. So if you're over age 40, you might need your reading glasses or a magnifying glass. Price check. One way to save time on your search for products made with healthier oils is to start by looking at the price tag before drilling down into the ingredients. If a product costs twice as much or more than its neighbors on the shelf, that's, unfortunately, a good indication that it might be made with a healthier oil or without added vegetable oils. This is often the case with salad dressings, mayonnaise, nut butters, canned seafoods, and pasta sauces. But always read the ingredients to be sure. Understanding the ingredients list. Once you've spotted a member of the Hateful Eight, the next step is to figure out if the food contains a deal-breaking amount or a minimal amount. To do that, you need to understand a few basic principles of the ingredients list. List order. The first ingredient on the list is the one present in the largest amount by weight. The second ingredient on the list is the one present in the next largest amount by weight, and so on. The order rule applies to the ingredients listed within parentheses, too. This helps us to guess how much vegetable oil is in a product. Fat calories. When vegetable oils are the only source of fat calories, you can directly calculate the percentage of calories coming from vegetable oil. See figures 9-3 and 9-4 in the supplementary PDF. When there are multiple fat sources, it's more difficult, but knowing the list order rule can help you take a guess. Less than blank percent. The number in the blank is either going to be 1, 1.5, or 2%. Any oil listed after this is, by definition, present in less than that percentage by weight. You'll see a lot of chemical names listed here. Most of them will be your classic hard-to-pronounce chemicals, including flavoring agents, antioxidants, stabilizers, preservatives, and texturizers. Oils listed here are generally not present in high enough concentrations to worry about. Spice mixes and seasoning blends in other foods. Many spice mixes and seasoning blends used in packaged foods are blended with oil to prevent caking, so that the final mixture is usually around 1% oil by weight. Sometimes the oil's purpose is explicitly stated, as in added to prevent caking. Sometimes the label also explicitly states seasoning blend or spice blend or a similar term, and then lists all the various spices, including the oil within parentheses. If no oil is listed, it's safe to assume the spice mix doesn't contain any. But sometimes you'll have to figure it out yourself by noticing that the term vegetable oil is surrounded by spices, salt, pepper, and other ingredients that are usually part of a spice mix. In all of these cases, the oils are not present in high enough concentrations to worry about. Oils added to dried fruit. Many dried fruits are given a light coating of oil to prevent clumping. In some cases, the amount is significant. One way to tell is by looking at the total fat content on the nutrition label. If the number is zero, it's probably insignificant. But even 1 gram can be significant. For example, a brand of dried blueberries called Foods to Live contains 1 gram of sunflower oil per serving, which equates to 9 calories of fat, meaning that 10% of the total 90 calories per serving will be derived from the oil. Kitchen Detox Assist. Now it's time to get into your kitchen, roll up your sleeves, and start clearing out the toxic food. Many people have found it helpful to have a list, like what's in the supplementary PDF. It provides a plan of attack to jumpstart the project. Other people don't feel that they need a list to follow. In fact, you don't even need to throw out all your old food for the 2-week challenge in Chapter 11 if you don't want to. Either way, reading through the list will help you to better understand the scope of the problem and reveal how seed oils find so many ways to seep into our lives. How to use the worksheet. Pull items from your cupboards, fridge, pantry, and anywhere else you store food and ingredients by group. Each heading is a group. Review ingredients for seed oils and make notes as follows. Mark a check mark to indicate that you've checked the product or products and found no seed oil. Mark R to indicate products in this category that need to be replaced. Use the shopping list in the supplementary PDF to help find replacements. Consider discarding or donating products with seed oils. Most folks just toss them. You may find vegetable oils in many of the foods you've come to depend on, particularly breakfast foods, such as muffins and protein bars, snacks, pretzels and microwave popcorn, for example, and convenience foods, pasta sauces, frozen dinners, and takeout. Don't panic. In the supplementary PDF, you'll find a link to my shopping list, which gives you brand name recommendations for alternatives to just about everything you could possibly need. Be patient. It will take time to go through every product in your kitchen, and it may take you a few grocery trips before you find your new go-to foods so that you can just grab a familiar item without reading the label. Though be careful here, too. Sometimes brands will change their ingredients without warning, so it's good to check even if you think you've picked up an old standby. With time, you'll become adept at spotting these ingredients on labels and will be able to quickly move on to a better choice. Protect your mitochondria. Since seed oils are the worst mitochondrial toxin in the food supply, avoiding them is the single most powerful thing you can do to protect your mitochondria. If you want to keep your mitochondria healthy, you simply must avoid vegetable oils. Here are a few more essential dietary strategies for keeping your mitochondria healthy by controlling oxidative stress. Pursue protein. Assess and boost your whole food-based protein intake. You can assess your portion intake with the protein intake calculator in the supplementary PDF, which also provides guidance about how much you need. Chapter 10 will go into depth on sources of protein. Mind your minerals. Your body's antioxidant enzymes require a variety of minerals, including iron, magnesium, selenium, manganese, and copper. If your dietary intake of these is inadequate, you should supplement. To assess your mineral intake, see the supplementary PDF. Avoid omega overload. I don't recommend supplementing with fish oil unless you've been tested and are critically deficient in omega-3. For tips on avoiding fish oils that are oxidized, see the supplementary PDF. Eschew environmental toxins. There are literally thousands of environmental toxins affecting our mitochondria, so I'm only going to list the most potent ones here. Smoking legal or recreational drugs, air pollution, phthalates from eating or drinking out of plastic containers, heavy metals, such as lead, mercury, and arsenic, and PABA in sunscreen. Sleep and exercise are also key to keeping your mitochondria healthy and functional. Avoiding the hateful eight when dining out. Very often when I warn patients about the toxicity of vegetable oil, they reassure me that they're not eating any, saying, "I don't cook with any of those oils. I only cook with olive oil." Even if you consider yourself a health nut, chances are you're loading up on enough of these unstable oils to harm your body in a big way, because other people are preparing foods for you in restaurants, at the grab-and-go section of the grocery store, and at shopping malls, airports, hotels, dining halls, and so on. Restaurants also take advantage of the fact that vegetable oils cost less than traditional fats and oils, like olive oil and butter. Since many customers choose and rate restaurants based on price, and vegetable oils help keep that dollar figure down, they're now in foods at every type of restaurant, from fine dining to fast food. You can spend $600 a plate in the Napa Valley's famous French Laundry restaurant and still be fed seed oils, or $16 at a local ethnic restaurant that uses only traditional fats. So, It's not always about how much money you are spending. It's about finding restaurants that cook with traditional fats and knowing what to order. Your server may not even know which foods are made or cooked with vegetable oil. Restaurants use vegetable oil in all deep-fried, pan-fried, and batter-fried foods, including crispy noodles, onion rings, fried shrimp, chicken nuggets, chicken fingers and fillets, and Japanese tempura. Restaurants love serving deep-fried food because the process is so simple that you can hire folks without any culinary skills whatsoever. Dump, dip, cool, and serve. Since it's so easy, deep frying is often applied to as many menu offerings as possible, even those you might think are pan-fried or sautéed, such as chicken parmigiana, battered chicken, and breaded prawns. Deep-fried food is the worst of the worst because the vegetable oils in deep fryers are continuously heated and reused over and over for days. U.S. law requires changing fryer oils after a week. But since the law isn't easy to enforce, it's usually that long, if not longer, before the oils in fryers are replaced. A friend of mine who spent years working over a fryolator at a fancy French bistro while putting herself through business school told me she can't remember seeing the oil ever getting changed. Restaurants also use vegetable oils in sauces traditionally made with butter or olive oil, including hollandaise sauce and aioli. Most salad dressings contain vegetable oil in place of olive oil or cream, and lecithin derived from vegetable oil in place of egg yolk. Any dish that contains mayonnaise will also contain vegetable oil, since mayo is rarely made from olive oil. Restaurants often par-cook vegetables early in the day and finish the cooking later. Most of these par-cooked foods are already sautéed in vegetable oil, so asking for alternative cooking fats would require major disruptions in the kitchen. Vegetable oils are also already baked into donuts, danishes and muffins, and numerous other kinds of desserts and confections. My patients often tell me that they feel physically unwell after big vacations, and they've assumed it was because of their various vacation overindulgences or perhaps lack of sleep. If you feel bad after traveling or after you've eaten out more than usual, there's another factor to consider: how much vegetable oil you consumed. That said, we can't always cook at home, and sometimes we want to socialize. The next section summarizes the most important foods to avoid when dining out to reduce your exposure to toxic fats. It also gives you a few tricks of the trade for maxing out on healthy, energy-sustaining fats while you're on the go. Avoid anything deep-fried. Avoiding deep-fried food is the number one rule for restaurants and grabbing food out. As mentioned earlier, anything battered or breaded and fried is typically deep-fried. And in fast food restaurants and many other establishments, it's often fried twice, once at the factory and a second time just before you're served. More than half the calories in some deep-fried foods are in the form of the most oxidized and disease-inducing heat-deformed seed oils you can possibly find. If in doubt, ask. But here are some of the most popular deep-fried foods that you should avoid: battered or breaded shrimp, calamari, clams, and fish. Breaded chicken, including nuggets, fingers, and cutlets. Chips, including corn chips, potato chips, and veggie chips. Chicken fried steak, crunchy taco shells. Donuts, deep fried cookies and pastries, for example, churros, rice fritters, and funnel cake. French fries, fried chicken, hash browns, onion rings, tater tots, tempura sushi, or vegetables. Tempura means batter fried. Choose baked or steamed. Choosing entrees and sides that are baked or steamed are preferable to entrees and sides that are fried. Pick smarter toppings and sides and watch the sauce. Avoid mayonnaise and anything made with it: coleslaw, potato salad, macaroni salad, egg salad, and tuna salad. Tartar sauce, oil-based sauces, dips, dressings, creamy dressings like ranch are especially problematic, sauces, and finishing oils, such as Subway's oil and vinegar, as these are most often made with seed oils. Most establishments carry a few options that will help boost the flavor of your selections. So be sure to review the menu or ask what sides and toppings are available. McDonald's now offers real butter to go with its pancakes, but you can ask for butter at any time of the day, and it dresses up any of their entrees. To boost flavor, ask if the following are available when dining out. Avocado, bacon, butter, coconut, cheese, sliced, cubed, or shredded, cream, cream cheese, guacamole, hot sauce, lettuce, mustard, brown, Dijon, etc. Nuts, raw or dry roasted, olives, onions, peperoncini, peppers, pickles, relish, salsa, green or red, seeds, raw or dry roasted, soy sauce, sour cream, sriracha sauce, tamari sauce, tomatoes. Order high-protein foods. Choose burgers, grilled, non-breaded chicken, fish fillets, not fried or shredded, like tuna salad, or slices of roasted meats and cold cuts. Solid chunks of meat, such as steak, are better than shredded meats, such as carnitas. Choose salads with lots of flavorful ingredients. Pick a Cobb or chef salad, but skip the dressings. Try the soup. Soups usually contain very little oil. Cream-based soups, miso, pho, and bone broth are best. Upscale hotels often make chicken soup with real bone broth. Skip the popcorn at the movies. The butter is simply butter-flavored seed oil. It's also often cooked, or popped, in a mixture of canola and coconut oil. Avoid pre-made baked goods. Cookies, muffins, and non-dairy-based cakes and desserts are often made with seed oils. Safer fast food choices. Seek out the following whenever possible. Poke bowl franchises. Korean barbecue, sushi, Arby's. Their meats are higher quality than most. Grocery stores selling rotisserie chicken or meaty soups. Restaurant websites are a great resource and offer an opportunity to get information without the added pressure of an audience in the form of your server and dining companions. Read the menu before you go. Many restaurants post their entire menu online. After reviewing the menu, I suggest calling ahead to ask about specific dishes. You can use the information in the rest of this chapter to guide the conversation. Call ahead, if possible. This is a good solution for anyone who really dislikes asking questions during the ordering process. Calling ahead allows you to become comfortable with the whole process of Q&A. Basically, you can practice your routine this way, but without the extra pressure of having your friends as an audience. The best time to call is generally between 2 and 4 p.m. to avoid the lunch and dinner rush hours. Whether you're calling ahead or in the restaurant, there are four things you need to communicate. You need to avoid seed oils. The oils you need to avoid: corn, canola, cottonseed, soy, sunflower, safflower, grapeseed, rice bran. You are fine with butter, cream, and olive oil. You don't expect your server or whoever answers the phone to know, but you do expect that he or she will ask the kitchen. Reasons to give for avoiding seed oils can include intolerance, allergy, and dietary restrictions. Here's a script you can use. Can you tell me if there are any menu items that I can order that can be prepared using only 100% olive oil, not a blend, or real butter, not butter oil or margarine, and that will be completely free of any vegetable oils or blended oils? If you have to ask the kitchen, I can wait. Depending on the response, you may need to add, I am intolerant to soy oil, canola oil, rice bran oil, and the other factory-refined vegetable oils. Here's a shorter version that I recommend when you're already at the restaurant. Do you have anything that you can cook in butter? You may need to specify real dairy butter and not butter oil. Be sure to show your appreciation, whatever the answer is, but be prepared to be disappointed. A hearty, thank you so much for looking into it for me. It really helps. Or anything similarly positive often makes a big difference to the staff. It relieves any built-up tension around the table, too, if you're asking in person. In addition, if the restaurant actually does have at least one seed oil-free option, please take a moment to express what a rare gift their chef is offering to the world, and that you truly appreciate the extra effort required to use healthy fats and oils. Think of your whole Q&A conversation as an opportunity to help expand the no-seed oil movement. Let's earn a reputation for kindness, patience, and truth-seeking.